HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 148, recorded live Wednesday, January 28th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks about MEF, the Managed Extensibility Framework, with Glenn Block.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And I've got a cold today. Hopefully that won't be too distracting, but I'm sitting down here in Building 36 with Glenn Block, Program Manager for MEF. Fun to work on a project called MEF. Glenn, what is MEF? Why does it have a silly name?
Well, you know, we like to come up with silly names, which we change before the time we actually ship. What is MEF? That's a good question. Really, what MEF is a technology to enable customers to build applications that have an open set of extensions. Where what I mean by extensions is that, you know, after an application has been deployed, someone can come along and create some kind of custom addition to that application. But the difference being that with MEF, you don't have to design the application to know what the finite set of things will be. It actually does kind of a discovery process to find things. And where that really becomes ideal and why we call it the Managed Extensibility Framework is, you know, if I'm developing a third-party application like a CRM system and I want to have an ecosystem of different vendors that could be creating add-ons to that, then with MEF, they pretty much just deploy their functionality into the bin folder and the app just discovers that it's available and it shows up.
Now, in all the Microsoft marketing speech right there, I didn't hear plugins. Is it safe to paraphrase for me to kind of take what you just said in my brain and put it back out and say, MEF makes it really easy to write apps that support plugins?
MEF does make it easy to write. Yes, it is a plugin architecture. It goes a little bit further than that because, you know, when we talk about how MEF does what it does, it's actually a compositional engine. So what I like to compare that to is if I was going to build a traditional application where I would add in extensibility, it tends to be a model where I have a host and then there's some extensions that maybe are in a bin folder or somewhere else. I might have a configuration file. With MEF, because it's a compositional model, those extensions themselves actually can be further extended all the way down the line. And because it's also where the composition comes in is to provide those extensions the things they need. And this is commonly, you know, there's a principle in software design called dependency injection. And we've had a whole bunch of conversations with folks that have compared MEF to something known, particularly in the open source community, as a dependency injection container. But the idea of dependency injection is that you have a component that is not responsible for getting its dependencies. Those dependencies are pushed in. And primarily folks use dependency injection containers for decoupling their systems and for testability. In the case of MEF, where we're using dependency injection in terms of the principle is to say that I'm an extension that's loading up. That extension is going to need some things coming from the host, or even if my extension is being extended, so to speak. So we use inversion of control and dependency injection, these principles, but we use them for solving a very specific problem, which is how do these third-party extensions that are getting added to the system get what they need?
Okay, so dependency injection is the idea that the object has some dependency, it needs it, and it's being injected into the object as opposed to the object going off and being in control of looking for it itself.
Yes.
That's why we call it inversion of control, because suddenly the car object is no longer responsible for finding its wheels. It just shows up and wheels are on it, and it doesn't know where they came from.
Well, and the thing that's interesting about inversion of control is it really relates to a thing called the Hollywood principle, which means don't call us, we'll call you. And the problem, and Fowler, you know, identified this in Patterns of Enterprise Architecture, his great tome, was that, you know, almost any framework that's out there does inversion of control. It almost has no meaning because it's like, think of it like this. I create a WinForms application. I drop a user control on that WinForms app. Am I responsible for calling that control, or does the framework do it? So that's the idea of inversion of control. But the difference, I think, between using things like DI containers and such to achieve inversion of control versus when it's like baked into the .NET framework is you're solving problems that traditionally you would solve through imperative coding. Like with WinForms, I never had to manually create the control and add it. It always did it for me. But it's taking these things like these inversion of control containers and saying, okay, well now instead of me imperatively calling all my code, I can actually wire up something else to do it for me. And by doing that, that means that I can replace in a test environment, for example, which things it wires up. Because anytime I write imperative code that says A equals new B, well, unless I happen to be in like a dynamic language where I actually can at the language level replace that, I'm always going to get a B. But if I go to an inversion control container and saying resolve B, what I get might not be a B at all. I mean, it may implement, I may go ask for an I B, which is an interface. Yeah. And then I don't know or care actually what the concrete implementation is, because when I'm doing IOC, I'm just working through contracts. And that is a parallel. Like in MEF, when you work with these extensions, we call them parts. And it's a very simple concept in MEF that you build up your app consists of a set of parts. Those parts have exports, which are things they give off, and imports, things they take in. We use this notion of contract there as well, because if I'm going to import something, how do I know what the thing that I'm going to import looks like or what it's called? We call that thing a contract that defines what that is.
Okay, so is MEF an IOC container or not?
So what I would say to that is that when you say that question, it's a very overloaded question. What I take that to mean, and I used to work in the patterns and practices team where we build Unity, that I would say, yes, that is an IOC.
So Unity, maybe familiarize people with Unity who may not be familiar with
sure.
it. Unity is an IOC container.
Unity is an IOC container, and it was built to be an IOC container. But again, when you say that, what does that mean? What I take that to mean when somebody says to me, is MEF an IOC container, is I solve a set of problems using this thing I call an IOC container. Can MEF solve those problems? And my IOC container was built to solve those problems in a very specific way. What I would say about MEF is MEF was really harvested. We didn't look at what other people were doing with IOC containers and say, hey, let's go build one of those. What we did is we had a set of problems around this space of, you know, getting these apps to be extensible. And we basically said, hey, this principle of using inversion of control is a great way to solve that. So what I would say is that if you look at it on a scenario by scenario basis, there are some things we do that overlap with what IOC containers do. How we do it may be very different but it's really about the end goal of what we built it for.
Okay, so if someone's out there already and they have tried a number of IOC containers and maybe they're trying AutoFac and they've looked at Unity and they've played with StructureMap, would they want to also put MEF in their app, and why? Or wouldn't they just implement MEF-like structures in their own existing container that makes them happy?
So one of the things that's interesting about that is because MEF does a very specific set of things, we actually think that there's a world where both live together. And we've been prototyping on that. And what that means is it's not a two-container solution. What MEF really has is an abstract way of defining in general components and their dependencies. And so you can imagine taking an IOC container and MEF enabling it. That means that that IOC container still works the way that it works, but what it also does is it now understands MEF's component language so that it can automatically also take in things from MEF. So the other day, Nick Blumhart, who's the author of AutoFac, and we've got some really passionate guys from the IOC space on the MEF team. Nick Blumhart authored AutoFac. He and I were with Chris Tavares.
Who wrote Unity.
And we were doing some spiking around integration between the two, which is where I have an IOC container and I'm using MEF for that third-party extensibility. The way I basically position it, though, is the difference between the two is that IOC containers are really about managing a known set of things in different environments, right? Like I want a logger in my, in this environment. I want a mock logger in my test environment. So MEF is really about managing an unknown set of things. And what that boils down to is that in an IOC container, I tend to do either a convention-based or a registration, a specific registration mechanism to say, here's what logger means, here's what this means, here's what that means. MEF uses the code and a discovery mechanism and annotations on the code, which are attributes, where whatever shows up in the system, that's what's there. So again, taking it to a higher level, it's about you use MEF to really manage a set of unknown things. You use IOC containers to manage a set of known things.
Now, that last sentence is about the clearest explanation that I've heard so far. And I wonder, why is it that it's so confusing? I mean, it seems like a lot of people are confused.
Sure.
So then I think that the next kind of question would come up would be, why isn't there an IOC container or what I guess people call a microkernel baked into the .NET framework? And is that, you know, holding aspects of design in the framework back?
Sure.
Because, you know, the thing I get confused about is that people who seem to know what they're talking about always say, and here's an IOC container in 14 lines. Why doesn't Microsoft just shove that in system.dll and we'll all go on with our lives?
Sure. I think sometimes there's too much focus, I personally believe, and I'm a big fan of IOC containers. IOC containers are a means to an end. The end is really about, you know, decoupling systems is really kind of the primary goal of using IOC. So, I think we do get hung up on the idea of I must have a thing called an IOC container. Having decoupling in the framework and having mechanisms to do that, MEF is certainly a mech, again, it's about, if you go at the higher level, MEF is certainly a mechanism for decoupling different components. And MEF has two aspects to it, and I don't want to get into this too much because it will confuse people. There's a layer in MEF that has to do with exactly how things manifest in this attributed model. And there's a layer of MEF that has absolutely nothing to do with that. So when you talk about the microkernel, almost like a microkernel, that functionality is something that we're going to be looking to bake deeper and deeper in the framework. So I would say that we certainly hope that MEF is that technology. We've built it. We've done a lot of work in the last year to evolve it to be that technology that could provide that general decoupling in the platform going forward. Do we need something else? Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, Unity certainly is very much like an IOC, like Castle Windsor and these other things.
Right.
It is certainly something, though, that is important to the .NET framework that we want to support these more decoupled type designs, right, both for applications built on top of the framework and even within the framework components itself.
Hi, this is Scott coming at you from another place and time. Are you looking for an object relational mapping tool for mission-critical projects using Link and .NET? I wanted to share with you Genome. It's specifically designed for developing .NET enterprise applications. Genome is a mature Link-integrated ORM tool. It's been employed in numerous large-scale projects over the last 6 years. Genome was created for the .NET platform as opposed to being a port from Java. And it's thrived on platform innovation since .NET 1.0. Genome has supported Link since its CTP release in May of 2006. It offers several unique features, such as encapsulation and reuse of Link queries and expressions. You can really fully harness the power of Link while benefiting from your database platform's unique features. Compose complex Link queries, decompose the query logic in your domain model. Link supports all the major database platforms you find in enterprise environments like SQL Server, but also Oracle and IBM DB2. You can find out more about how Genome integrates tightly with Visual Studio and what tools Genome offers to reduce development time at tinyurl.com/trygenome, G-E-N-O-M-E, where you can also download a free and fully functional trial version. I hope you enjoy it.
Now, there's two interesting things about MEF that have struck me in the couple 4 or 5 days that I've been hanging out up here on campus. The first one is that it keeps coming up in conversations, and I don't mean that in a like complimentary or flattery sense. I'm just telling you the truth that like I go into a group and I just interviewed the guy that wrote one of the guys that worked on the WPF editor for Dev 10. And he goes, oh yeah, we use MEF under there. It just, people, oh yeah, we're using Meth for that. Oh yeah, you're using Meth. So you've successfully sold this thing internally.
Well, I mean, honestly, the reason it evolved was because of that. There were about 5 or 6 different efforts within the company that were trying to solve this problem of, you know, decoupling and also the extensibility problem. You know, if you look at it, in the .NET framework, we haven't really had a good story around general extensibility. We've had the managed add-in framework, but that was really built more around solving a problem of isolation and security and versioning. But, you know, it also...
And it was hard.
It was hard. It imposes a lot. I've actually been looking at Meth integration now, so I'm dealing with that right now. But it didn't have those compositional aspects, and yes, and it imposed a lot on the types of types. You know, the types that it dealt with, making sure they're marshallable or you know, that they can pass across the wire because it uses remoting app domains. Meth was built to be very simple, but we don't have, other than the Reflection API, you know, a simple way to say, I've got an app, I want to build a set of extensions for it, and I want it to work. In a lot of my talks on Meth, I've talked about how there are a lot of these very specific APIs that work with a very specific technology, like ASP.NET has the provider model. Well, that's great, but what if I'm not on a web server, right? And Office has a great set of extensibility APIs, but what if I'm not in Office? Do I want to bind my clients that they have to develop in Office? So it was a common need coming from multiple different angles that made us say, you know what, we need to solve this problem, and we've worked with a lot of internal partners to solve it. And so it's like, yeah, this is the answer we've been waiting for. So they've jumped on the board. And it's been groups like the Connected Systems Division with the Oslo Editor, for example, which is actually using Python, which exposes another aspect of Meth, which is that it's not bound to types. Most IOC containers, all of the ones I know, are really very heavily bound on, you know, the thing that comes in is a type. Meth actually can work with dynamic languages and other kinds of things. I guess the long answer to your short question is that it's solving a very a common problem that we haven't had a good answer for in the framework.
Well, it sounds like, at least at Microsoft, it solved exactly the right problem because it's an idea virus and it's spreading appropriately. So the second thing that I think is interesting about Meth that I've noticed internally is that no one seems to care that it's open source. And you're developing it in a very open way. It's MSPL, right?
MSPL, yes.
And
it was another license at one point, but we're MSPL now.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, you want to speak about that little briefly?
Sure. I mean, the interesting thing about that whole thing was, like, when I joined the Meth team, I was really hot on, we need to get this out there. And there were a bunch of reasons why I wanted to get out to CodePlex. You know, we've been accused as a company of developing things kind of in a cave sometimes, like we're the only ones, and I won't mention examples, that, you know, have solved this problem. And I knew, especially coming from PMP, and I've been very involved with, like, the alt.NET community and stuff like that, that, you know, this problem has been solved before. We may be addressing it in a different way, but I wanted to make sure that the people that were solving that problem knew that, hey, we're not trying to knock you out of the box. We're looking to solve a very specific thing, but also that we allowed, you know, that mind share to pour in and say, look, we've been in this space. Why don't you do this way? One great example of where that benefited Meth is the idea of constructor injection. We initially were only supporting property injection, which is what most of our partners were using. And there was feedback very loud and clear on Christoph Swalina's blog, hey, you guys should have constructor injection. We added it only because the community said, we really want this. So I wanted to get it out to CodePlex. Coming from PMP, I saw a real value in having that visibility out there. And in doing it, we had some parts of Meth that came from other places. And so we had some issues around, you know, can we put all the code out there? And because of that, we ended up going out with a more restrictive license initially. But the goal was all good. We wanted to get the code out there and be visible. And I got slammed pretty hard by that. And I respect, you know, it was Miguel Icaza, actually, that slammed us because
Miguel,
said, you know,
the founder and
creator
of Mono
because he said, well, now we can't use Meth on Mono and we're not looking to write Meth.
But, of course, in this particular instance, it was an innocent an ignorant mistake, and you fixed it quickly, and it works out. So now it's MSP on. That means it's all of it. So that means.
But some people are still brooding. Like, I still see posts that say, ha ha ha, don't use MEF because it's poison and it's LPL. And, or people say that I was trying some kind of marketing thing of watering down open source. I'm a big fan.
I think they give you too much credit. But it's MSPL. So what does that mean to us? I mean, what does that mean to a listener who's using MEF and maybe they put it into their enterprise?
So that means that you're free to take the code. You can modify it. It gives the Mono guys, for example, Miguel already got MEF to compile on Mono. In doing that, he had to make a slight change because there was a read-write lock. There was some kind of lock that we were using internally that was not supported on Mono 2.0 yet. Which they were planning to support. But the point was that, and he didn't actually do this, but he could make that change and put that out there, and people can use it if they want to, just like they use other open source. Now, when we say it's open source, I mean, we're still owning the code.
Okay, so you're not taking commits.
We're not taking commits.
So it's not open source. It's source opened.
Well, but because it's MSPL, if somebody wanted to, they could take the entire MEF code base and copy it into MEF contrib, and the community could start branching it if they wanted to. We wouldn't pull that back, though, probably.
What kinds of things have you seen people do? Has anyone made any major changes to MEF?
So the biggest one right now, if I call out, is a guy who his Twitter is the Code Junkie. His name is Andreas. I'm forgetting his last name now for some reason. He's built a program. So MEF has these programming models, and on one of them we have is the attributed model. I was describing that. And because we've decoupled it in the way we have, you can write your own entirely new model, like for Python, that doesn't support attributes. Well, he's gone and built a model that's completely configuration-driven. Because he wants to use MEF. MEF has a bunch of capabilities beyond just the traditional of I get a type thing. Like I can add metadata. I can lazy instantiate and lazy load. And this is all because we were trying to support these scenarios like Visual Studio and such like that. Well, so he wants to leverage that within his app, but he wants to have control over the set of finite things that are getting created, and he doesn't want to have to put attributes on there. He wants to be pure POCO. So he built his own model.
POCO meaning plain old CLR objects.
Plain old CLR objects. He built his own model, which is about to go live on MEF contrib, which will allow customers to go and configure MEF completely through configuration.
All right. So I feel still a little bit like we've been talking in abstracts, and we may have actually lost people. So if there's anyone who's still actually listening at this point, why don't we talk about what we did with the Baby Smash demo? I need to get that code out. This was a demo that we did at PDC, and if you go and Google around for TL49, you'll see my talk at PDC, and I had a little MEF bit in the beginning. And do you remember the code for your talk at PDC?
TL33, I believe.
TL33, and then you'll see Glenn's very good talk on MEF. So one of the things that we did, and it took, I think, maybe 4 hours, was I just made a little quick prototype of Baby Smash. Baby Smash is my little toddler game that lets kids slap on the keyboard and put shapes on the screen. And the idea was that Jason Olson, who's a Microsoft employee and a MEF fan, and I would basically swap out the shapes. And I had everything was hard-coded. I was newing up the shapes. I had a rudimentary shape factory that made random shapes. And he wanted to be able to change those to an entirely different shape. So kind of walk me through the process here.
So as we mentioned before, MEF has a concept of parts, imports, and exports. What you guys did is you created a thing called Smash Packs. Mm-hmm. So if you'd start off, you'd say, okay, I've got an app. That app wants to be able to get Smash Packs. So immediately that's going to, from a MEF perspective, going to say, okay, somebody in the app is going to need to be importing Smash Packs. I think in your case, you did an iSmash Pack provider.
I think we ended up doing it just at the shape level. And then the goal is to go and MEFify everything. We're going to do audio. For the demo, we did just these shapes. So basically, shapes would come from somewhere else. We needed shapes. That was, I think, our import.
Yep. So the way MEF works is really easy. You define a contract like an interface. You basically say, okay, I'm going to have a collection property, which is a collection of providers, and I'm going to put an import attribute on that. Mm-hmm. Then what I'm going to have is a set of assemblies that are going to reference that shared contract, that are going to say, okay, here's my available smash packs, right, or providers mm-hmm. or whatever we come up with. Then the thing that brings the glue together is you create a thing called a catalog.
Right. Now, I remember that we created a catalog, and it was important to us that for the demo that we take a DLL And while the app was still running, we drop the DLL into the bin folder.
So I hate to tell you this, but we're actually going to pull that functionality.
Oh, you're killing me.
Well, the reason is it's great demoware. Practically.
Well, it's dangerous practically.
It doesn't work out very well. It has lots of problems. And the reason is that functionality depends on the underlying file notification watcher, you know, the file system watcher mm-hmm. API. And which what it does is as soon as a file shows up, it says, oh, it's there. I'll grab it. The problem with that is let's say that you drop an assembly that has a dependency on another assembly. Well, now, and almost every time I've demoed this feature, I think you've been the only person I've seen who successfully demoed it without it failing once. And I saw you did the batch file trick. But anyway, yeah, you create a thing called a directory part catalog. And that directory, we're actually going to call it a directory catalog just to simplify it. You point it at a folder. It streams through assemblies. Now, how is it finding those contracts that you specified? Well, it's not just looking for the type and saying, ooh, you used an I thing. I'll just pick it up. Mm-hmm. We use a declarative language, which is essentially that if I want something, I put an import attribute. And if I have something available, I put an export attribute. So in each of those assemblies that represent your smash packs, you would have some kind of like, you know, my family smash pack provider
right.
that implements I smash pack provider. And then on top of it, it would have an export attribute. And that export attribute says I smash pack provider. The beauty of MEF is that let's say I did that and now it works. And suddenly you say, you know what? I want to open up my Smashpack providers so they can get some additional information back from the app. It's not just the host loads it and it does its thing. Well, now that Smashpack provider can start adding its own import attributes to pull back. And when it's pulling back, it doesn't know where it's coming from. It might be coming from an assembly that's sitting right next door that has an extension, or it might be coming from the app. It's very, very simple.
You know, is that a solution to what might ordinarily be a circular reference or maybe a very...
Well, kind of. I mean,
because
you have a contract, you've removed the circular reference in the sense that, yeah, I don't have a dependency on this guy and he doesn't then have a dependency on me. But the idea is with MEF, you've really broken that whole notion of who the provider of the thing is.
Right. Ignorance is bliss.
It's complete bliss. It's like I call a web service, right? I just call a method and I know that it's going to get more. I don't care who's on the other side. I just know that they satisfy the contract. It's the same idea of MEF. That actually means, though, that MEF apps are work well from a, you know, in terms of being designed from a testability aspect. Because I don't know who I'm asking for, that means if it's some mock thing, I don't care.
Right. So ultimately, your applications, they care about what they care about. They care about what they care about. They don't care about
how to get it. They don't care about what it actually is.
They don't care about who or how or where.
Exactly.
They care about what.
Exactly. You focus on the what.
Which actually gets to the solid principles. I hope you saw the show with Uncle Bob. You think about things like single responsibilities.
Sure. Dependency inversion.
More and more, I'm looking at my objects and I'm saying, he knows way too much about what's going on.
And he knew it a long time ago.
And he knew it early on. Right. He knew it the constructor. And just in order for some property to have some tiny little bit of knowledge, suddenly just little bits of perversion have sprinkled its way into my design.
Sure.
So then something like MEF would just kind of remove that. Let somebody else be the one that knows too much.
Exactly. But, you know, but I don't want to make it like you should use MEF for every single type, every single thing. I mean, it's designed to do a very specific thing, use it for what it was built for. And when we've had these conversations about kind of integrating with like IOC containers like Unity, it's been, or AutoFAC, which Nick was the first one to prototype that, it's been under the same context. I'm going to use MEF for what it's good for. I'm going to use these other things for what they're good for.
Cool. So where do people get more information on MEF? And more importantly, where can they see actual sample code that's going to help it really gel for them?
Sure. So if you go to our CodePlex site, codeplex.com/MEF, MEF is available with full source. We're committed, although we actually, just for customers to know, we will be shipping in the .NET Framework 4.0. But we're committed to keep the source out there, and we're going to keep it out there on 3.5, even though we're planning to take some 4.0 specific dependencies. And we're doing that for the community, so they have access to the code, et cetera. There are samples there. There is a wiki. We've not really gone as far with the wiki as we should. You can ping us and say, please add additional, and hopefully we'll get off our butts and get it done. But there's enough out there to get the basics, like what is an export, what's an import, and you'll find some samples there as well. Plus, there's a bunch of bloggers that have been blogging on MEF, and we have some links to some of those different posts that are out there. And I suspect there'll be one on your blog very soon.
Yeah, I think it's time to get the smash packs finished up. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Glenn Block, Program Manager on MEF, for talking to me today. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.